Elliot Friedman, there are official general manager vacancies in two locations around the NHL, Carolina Hurricanes and the Minnesota Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Or are there three? Should we throw the Toronto Maple Leafs into that mix as well? You write about this in 31 Thoughts.
Should we call it a vacancy or should we call it an undetermined situation?
A fluid situation, an evolving situation.
I like that one, evolving. Okay. I'm a big believer in evolution, Darwin, so we'll call it an evolving situation. So
then we'll talk about the social Darwinism between Kyle Dubas, Mark Hunter, and whether there's a mystery candidate as well. But obviously what happened on the ice is what happened on the ice. The Boston Bruins eliminate the Toronto Maple Leafs. A lot of discussions to fall from there. Who comes back? Who stays? Who's not wanted on the voyage? But sometimes the drama off the ice is at times more intriguing. And when it comes to Toronto sports and drama, few things intrigue quite like who's running this thing. Who's going to run this thing, Elliot?
I'll be the first to admit, Jeff, I don't have a great feel for it. I really don't. There have been times this year I've thought for sure that Kyle Dubas would be the GM next year. But there have been times I've thought for sure that Lou Lamoriello would be the GM this year, next year. I don't have a great feel for it. I'll be the first to admit. I know I'm supposed to be this magnificent insider, but I really don't know. I think Shanahan's done a really good job of keeping his plan private. You know, Lamoriello, as you know, is the vacuum of secrecy. Nothing ever gets out of there. And to be honest, I think one of the things they were trying to do was push it off as long as they possibly could. So I don't have a great feel for it. Here's what I know. Lamoriello had a 3-year deal plus 2 more years in some unspecified advisory role, but you don't have to stick to that if you don't want to. Last summer, they blocked Kyle Dubas from going to Colorado, and when you do that, that usually means someone's getting a promotion and someone's getting it soon. And thirdly, you, knowing much more about junior hockey than I do, know very well the rivalry between Dubas and Hunter from the Ontario Hockey League, London and Sault Ste. Marie, and what that might mean if one gets elevated over the other. And I think that's one of the reasons that Shanahan has put off the decision, because he knows that it's more than one decision. It affects probably 3 or 4 people.
Would it be safe to say that if one of Dubas or Hunter gets the job, that the other would no longer be there?
I've heard that theory. I don't know. Like, the bottom line is, I just imagine myself, let's just say, and I know this is really hard to believe, you and I didn't like each other.
Jerk.
Okay. And let's just say that we were vying for the same position at Rogers.
Yeah.
Okay. And you got it and I didn't. Would I immediately walk out saying, no, you chose Jeff over me and I'm not doing that? Or would I wait to hear as if there's something that they could offer me which would make me want to stay?
Now you start knifing the other person in the back.
Well, you might do that anyway. You may do that anyway. But, you know, I'll give you an example. There was a friend of mine was competing for a job in a firm, and he didn't get it. There were more rivals than they disliked each other, but he didn't like that he lost to this person. So he's starting to turn red when they were telling him, and the guy said, hold on a second. We knew this was going to be a reaction. So this is what we're going to do to keep you. And he never told me what it was, but he said he stayed. Mm-hmm. They had a plan. They knew what his reaction was going to be, and they thought, we want to keep him because he's valuable, so we're going to come up with this. And in this case, it worked. My question is, Jeff's got this little smile, sly smile he's giving me, so I know what he's going to say, well, what's better than being the GM? So I don't know.
He's going to come at you with some Don King, where there's money, there's understanding.
Exactly. You know, and maybe it is something as simple as money. But I think also, if you're worried about losing those guys, what can you do to make them stay?
The next question becomes, at what point does this start to become evident? Right? Now it's all about the timeline. You write in the piece about Lou Lamoriello, if you have time, take it.
Yeah.
There's no need to rush into anything. And that's sane. And that's smart. And that's a wise and veteran in Lou Lamoriello. So no surprise there. But at what point does this timeline need to actualize? Like right now, it's just speculation. Right now, we're in the, everything was Aristotle. Everything, all things exist in two states, potentiality and actuality. Right now it's in potentiality. Is there a timeline for actuality here?
Well, who's deciding what contract decisions you're making?
See, this is one of the questions I had for you. The stipulation that Lou Lamoriello has in his contract are these two sort of the two vague years outside of the general manager duty. Is that for him to decide, or is that for Brendan Shanahan?
I assume that Shanahan decides.
Okay, so that's not like Lou option. I'm picking up.
No.
I'm exercising these 2 years in this capacity.
No, I think it's a done deal. Like, it's in there. But I guess Shanahan decides, do they change it and keep him as the GM?
You see, then
like, I really thought, Jeff, there was going to be a point during the year where they were going to announce we're coming back status quo.
With Lou. That yeah. The contract was already. Because it's funny, too, because that school of thought has raised its head a couple of different times this year where, I mean, I'm sure you've been told, it's been whispered to me that, oh, yeah, the contract's done. It's sitting in a drawer at the Air Canada Center. And they're going to bring the contract out of the drawer at some point this year or at the end of this year.
Yep.
Never happened.
Never happened.
So here comes another question then. Let's just say they do come back status quo. Or let's say they decide to go with Mark Hunter as a general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Does that then free up Kyle Dubas to pursue work elsewhere, i.e. Carolina, after he's been denied Colorado?
I have no idea. Like, that's the thing. Like, we don't know. Like, was he given a different contract last year? Was he extended? Was, you know, what happened to his situation?
All right, then. So that's off the ice. We have time quick before we start the show about on the ice?
Absolutely.
Who's back and who's not? Let me run down the candidates here for you. Starting with Tyler Bozak, whom people have already married to Vancouver, by the way.
I think he'll test the market. Like, I don't think any of the UFAs are coming back.
None. This is Philadelphia Flyers style. All
well,
UFAs.
You know, the one guy I do wonder about is Polak. They love him. He's not going to cost you a ton of money. I could see that.
Is he taking a spot away from someone, though? That's the only question. Is he
Who's
taking,
he
away,
taking a spot
is,
away?
Is he taking a spot away from someone who could use the ice time?
Well, that's the question. I'm just saying, like, I don't think Van Riemsdyk's coming back. They're not going to be able to afford him.
What would he fetch on open market, by the way, Van Riemsdyk?
36 goals this year in, what, he play less than 15 minutes a game?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest question is going to be term, right? You know, how do you get around the term? Because he's going to be 30 and people are going to look at it and say, well, we don't want to give him term. Okay, so you might have to give more AAV. Like, I have no doubt that that guy is going to find a job without, and there's going to be a lot of teams coming after him.
Mm-hmm.
Bozak, it's hard to find centers. I mean, look at the market. How many centers are UFAs? Tavares? Stasny?
Yeah, we talked about
Riley
this last
Nash,
week.
Bozak?
Yeah.
You know, Komarov, you know, if he doesn't dress for the playoffs, he's not coming back. And, you know, Dominic Moore, like, even though Babcock's not a huge fan, if they went back to him and said, we want to have you here, I'm sure he'd be here.
Mm-hmm.
But like, how many of those other UFAs are you looking at and saying they're coming back?
How did you read the Maple Leaf situation in the playoffs?
Kapanen's got a job.
Andreas Johnsson, does he have a job?
As long as he doesn't fall on his face in training camp, I think he's got a job.
Now, is that a direct, you just took Leo Komarov's spot? Is that an A to B?
I think it's two A's to two B's. Like, Kapanen, you got to think that guy's going to score, right? I don't know if he's going to score like Van Riemsdyk scored this past year, but you got to think he's going to score.
Because that has always been the feeling around the Maple Leafs. Like, at a certain point, those players need to push out the Van Riemsdyks and the Tyler Bozaks. Like, there's always the feeling that when this team actualized and it became a consistent playoff team that not just, you know, arrived at the postseason, but also, you know, did something, won a round or two, that it wasn't going to be Van Riemsdyk and that crew. It was going to be players that have pushed those guys aside, that have pushed those players out. Mm-hmm. And you're starting to see it right now. Aren't you?
Yeah. And I think there's more guys coming. But, you know, Liljegren on defense, he might be a couple years away. And now what they can do is they're going to have some flexibility to do some things. I got to think they're going out for a defenseman.
John Carlson?
I don't know if it's a UFA, but they looked at Tanev this year. They looked at McDonough this year. I heard they didn't make really serious offers.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they've seen what they've got, do they make a more serious offer? And I have a nagging theory, and I know people are going to go bonkers with this, so I'm just going to say it's my theory, okay? I don't know that this is going to happen. Do you think they would go, Austin Matthews and Tavares are represented by the same guy? Would they ever go and say, how can we get both of them?
CAA bundles the two together?
Well, I don't know. Like, I mean, But the thing is, like, CAA might not, and I understand the lawyers, or the lawyers, the agents, both those guys might not want to take discounts. They might just want to say no. Like, but if they do, maybe you work it out that way. But I'm trying to think what Toronto's doing with their roster. They got room to do stuff there now.
Let me give you a list of names here. I'm going to reach into the past for this. And I want you to add the last name to it. Larry Murphy, Jamie McCowan, Aki Berg, Mike Komisarek, Ryan McCabe, blank. Maple Leafs fans always pick one defenseman. It's, for whatever reason, and I don't know what it is about the Toronto marketplace. Some markets run coaches out of town. Some markets run goaltenders out of town. For whatever it is in Toronto, Maple Leafs fans pick one defenseman to run out of town. And that defenseman becomes emblematic of everything that is wrong with the organization. What happens to Jake Gardner?
Not the way we saw it going. Had a lead going into the third period, and you know, personally, I got to be better. It's a lot of this game's on me, and it's just not good enough, especially in a game like this. It's most important game of the season, and you know, I didn't show up, so there's not much I can say, really. It's gonna be a tough one to swallow, that's for sure. Let a lot of people down, and but you know what? Hopefully I can come back better from it, and it's too bad.
Look, he had a bad game, no question. What are you going to do? I mean, he owned it. The reason that they have to make a decision with Jake Gardner is his contract's up in a year.
One more year, yeah.
To me, the issue is not the performance. To me, the issue is the contract. You know, he's making $4 million, and he's probably going to get a raise.
Six.
I mean, it depends on what kind of year he has next year, right? But he's probably going to get a raise. Now, here's the question. Do you think that he's got to be part of your team? Can you afford that on your team?
What does that mean? Because
six.
That, okay,
let's
that,
just say it's six.
So, okay, I thought you meant like that type of player.
Yeah. No, I think you can always afford
I like Jake Gardner. I know I might be in the minority. Certainly in Toronto, I like Jake Gardner.
You know what? He played hard this year. He cares. He wants to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. He cares. I mean, I've lived it, to have a bad night on the biggest possible stage, and you feel like you're this big and you want to crawl into a hole. I always have time for a guy who will walk in front of a camera at the lowest moment of their career or life and will say, man, this is on me. To me, that's being an adult. That's being a leader. There's a book called A Season on the Brink about Bob Knight. I know Bob Knight is not exactly someone people really love. But there's a player in that book. I never forgot this. The guy's name is Winston Morgan. So 1 year, Winston Morgan was a starter at Indiana basketball. And the last 11 games, he played 58 seconds. He got benched. And Knight, you know Knight. He killed this guy. And so they finished their year. It was a terrible year. They lose their last game. And there's a coach there on the staff and who's leaving to take another coaching job. And this guy, Winston Morgan, he walks by that coach and he says, coach, I know you're leaving to be the coach at this school next year. I just wanted to say thank you for everything you did to me. I know you'll do a did with me. You'll do a great job. Bob Knight said he saw that and he said, everything I felt about that kid as a player changed. He had the worst ending to his year. And the last thing he did was go to a coach, and he hated all of us, and said, you'll do a great job. And I always remembered that. I always remembered that. I think about that constantly. Can you stand up and be an adult when life just sucks? And Jake Gardner did last night. And there were some people who tweeted at me, oh, he makes $5 million, like, you know, too freaking bad.
Yeah.
I don't buy that. I mean, I don't care how much money you make. When your failures and your disappointments happen for everyone to see, it doesn't matter what money you earn. I always have time for those kinds of guys.
Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
So the interesting thing about working with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick is these are two of the more idiosyncratic people in the business. Elliot, who used to steal my cufflinks and then not even return them all the time, mostly needed me when we used to do second period intermissions together on Hockey Night in Canada, mostly needed me to make sure that he was listening when it came time to do the show. Elliot, we're coming on. Elliot! And usually he would come on and deliver his excellent information. And my buddy Jeff Merrick, well, we did a lot of junior hockey together in particular, and there were a lot of Friday nights we spent doing that junior hockey. And mostly between periods, yeah, we were kind of watching the game, but a lot of it was dealing with Canadian music references. And for Merrick, it was always the same. Damien, I'll take April Wine for $50. No wonder these two make such a good pair.
I think it was more of the spoons. I think that was the first one that we bonded on, that we bonded over, Damien and I. Actually, Damien is one of my favorite people to travel with.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall so many different times just driving from the airport to, you know, Pickett, Quebec City for Memorial Cup. We're together. Think about Red Deer for Memorial Cup as well. Driving from airport or driving around town or going out of town on off days. Damien Cox is... And because you know what? Damien Cox is a thoughtful person and isn't just a baseball hat. And he's not just someone that is interested in talking about sports. Then that's it. To me, Damo is one of the more well-rounded and interesting people to travel with. Hands down.
I could see that. I haven't traveled with him a ton.
By the way, are you the dressing room cufflink thief?
Yes.
Mine are all gone.
Not anymore. In my first year, I had to borrow his a couple times, and it's right, I did not return them. But since then, I have three pairs of cufflinks that I carry in my knapsack.
Mine are all gone, so I've told our stylist to stop giving me French cuffs. I'm like, just don't, because I don't have any cufflinks, and when I have them, they vanish.
There are some real thieves up there. Like, you know, like
cufflinks are the only thing that vanish for me.
I remember one of my pairs of shoes disappeared once. I was like, who's wearing my shoes?
Shoes?
My belts disappear
yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, belts will go. I can see that.
But now I carry cufflinks with me. You know, Damien is right about a couple of things there. First of all, as you know, I do have the attention span of a housefly. So,
that's
like,
true.
A squirrel. Yeah. So, hey, cat. What? So that is true. And yes, I did steal his cufflinks once or twice. That's pretty funny.
That's good. Stop Thief. It's Elliot Friedman and 31 Thoughts. The blog is at sportsnet.ca right now. And a couple of things I want to get to from the blog this week. Some off the blog will go off the menu a little bit with you, Elliot. And want to mention Michael DiPietro will be aboard of the Windsor Spitfires, Memorial Cup champion last year, on his way to the World Championships this year with Team Canada, Vancouver Canucks prospect, and one of the most colorful personalities you'll meet anywhere in the CHL. It's always remarkable. And we saw it last year, the Memorial Cup with Matthew Barzal, then of Seattle Thunderbirds, now of the New York Islanders. There are just some kids that seem much more mature. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Some kids that just feel much more comfortable about who they are at a younger age and feel comfortable talking to quote-unquote grown-ups mm-hmm. About this game that they love and can have fun with it and are confident, but walking that Goldilocks line of confidence / cocky. Oh, this is too cold. This is too hot. This is just right. Michael DiPietro, to me, hits that line, that Goldilocks line perfectly of being confident but not cocky.
Nice
That's
kid.
Michael DiPietro.
Like, I didn't know him at all. Like, I've known him to watch him. Really, really nice kid. He's another example, Jeff. The sport's changing, whether hockey wants it or not. It's going to change. And this next generation is changing it. Like we talked about the Leafs in the first segment. I think the young Toronto players are chafing at some of the rules. Bruce Arthur wrote a really interesting column about Mitch Marner the other day. Mm. Mitch Marner, he wants to say what he thinks. I get the sense Matthews wants to say what he thinks. I think that's happening more and more. Like the idea of, I think it's still a team game. I still think a lot of the things that make hockey great matter. But I think these players, they want to show themselves. They want to make money off the ice. And that's going to change the sport.
It just may take a few years to get there.
It's closer than you think. I listen to Michael, okay, and I see a guy. Like, if I was him, that's a guy, if I was in what they call now influencers.
Yeah.
If I was an influencer, I'd want that guy at my side. He's young, he's funny, he's smart, he's got a good sense of humor, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, he has a chance to be a successful goaltender, he's got a good story, he's battled hard to get where he is. I want that guy on my side. And I think there's going to be more and more of that.
You know, in the interview, we should talk about this after, but just one thing quickly. We asked him about having bad days, because I have always known Michael to be this optimistic, smiling guy. Everyone has bad days, certainly.
Yeah.
But he always has this sense of optimism about everything. And, you know, the reason I asked him that was, as we were talking to him, I was thinking about a conversation that I had with Rick Hansen. This is back in another lifetime when I was doing open line radio. And I got a chance to interview Rick Hansen in studio. You can recall from the mid-80s, the Man in Motion tour, yep. Wheeled across the world, 26 months or something like that, raised millions of dollars, a paraplegic athlete, raised a lot of money for spinal cord research. And I remember saying to Rick Hansen, I said, does anything, like, you seem like such an optimistic person, always happy, despite the fact that, you know, you're living in the chair. I said, does anything bother you? Does anything get to you? Because you seem like someone that things just bounce off of. And he says, yeah, things upset me. You want an example? I said, yeah. He says, the escalator. So whenever I see people taking the escalator, I get upset, because I would give anything to get out of this chair to walk up those stairs.
Yes.
Honestly, Elliot, you know what you will never, ever since that, you know what you will never see me do?
Mm-hmm.
You will never see me take the escalator.
You know,
ever since then, I've always taken the stairs.
I get that. That's a great story. It's a beautiful story.
Rick Hansen, one of the most loveliest people you will ever get a chance to meet. I'll never forget that. I would give anything to get out of this chair and walk up those stairs. Okay, in 31 Thoughts, draft lottery. Now, you've made the point a couple of different times. Listen, draft day to me is always, well, it's 2 days now. Draft is always a huge tentpole for me. Loved it, always have. Used to devour the hockey news, draft previews going up like nobody. Like, I just loved everything about it. I still think this is an area where the NHL just nails it. Draft lottery day is now becoming a huge day in the calendar.
It's the biggest day.
Explain why you say that.
Because it determines the fortunes of franchises. Look who's won. Look who's lost. Toronto Maple Leafs, Austin Matthews, Edmonton Oilers, Connor McDavid. Look at how Arizona's dropped. Look at how Vancouver's dropped. It's changed teams.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I like it so much is it reinforces something that we don't like talking about in sports, and that's luck. Luck on the ice over 60 minutes, luck off the ice with lottery balls. We never want to talk about it, but to me, lottery day reinforces something that we don't like talking about, and that so much of this is just based on luck.
I have differing opinions, slightly. Luck is a big factor in life. There's no question about that. But one of the biggest things, the only thing I really hated about the Moneyball book was Billy Beane saying the playoffs were all about luck and people buying that excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's given people an excuse to say, oh, well, it's a smaller sample size, or we lost because we were unlucky. And it can be a factor. I'm not denying it. But over the years, I've heard too many people try to say, that's just the way it is. There's not much you can do. That makes me crazy. I don't like the built-in excuse. Now, I will say that one of the things I think is hardest about hockey is the game changes so much from game 82 on. Mm-hmm. Like, the hockey you see in the regular season has almost no resemblance to the hockey you've seen in the past couple of weeks and will continue to see over the next 6 weeks. And that is not an easy thing for a general manager or a team to plan for. But how many series did you see in the first round? By the way, how'd you do?
Not great. Every year I pick a few upsets.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, as I've talked about before on the show with you, I cheer for chaos.
Yes.
I cheer for people and I cheer for chaos.
Yes, that's
right. I wanted a little bit of chaos and I didn't get it in the first round.
I was 6-2. I was wrong on Anaheim and Columbus.
Yeah, I was 50-50.
Okay. So how many of those series do you think were won on luck?
I don't know.
I would say I don't know. Zero.
I don't know.
To me, zero.
Well, all the favorites won.
Not, you know, but like, how many?
What's an underdog?
How many? Exactly.
No, like, who was an underdog that won? Vegas beating LA feels like the underdog won, but it wasn't.
You know what? San Jose technically was below Anaheim in the standings, but I didn't see Anaheim or San Jose as an underdog.
So you kind of see everyone.
Like, I don't even think, like, to me, Columbus, Washington was even.
Yeah, Columbus, Washington was weird. That was a bizarre series.
But how many of those were luck?
I can't tell you.
Zero.
I can't tell you.
I can tell you.
You can tell me zero.
Zero.
Zero luck.
Zeros of those.
Every 60 minutes was earned.
No. And, I'm saying the overall series result was earned.
But if everything's even, then how can luck not be part of it?
Oh, don't get existential on me.
No, I'm serious.
Of course.
I don't want to take this. Listen, I don't want to take this conversation way off the track.
Of course, luck is a part of it.
Yeah.
But, like, have you ever watched 10 playoff series in your life where you said the lucky team won?
I think there are some series where I've looked at and I've said they were lucky to win those games in that series.
Yes.
And I think that happens often.
Yes.
And normally we turn to the goaltender and say, look, the goalie stole that series, when really he's only one player that, you know, all he can do is stop shots.
Well, the one I remember with that was Montreal-Washington when Halak beat the Capitals.
2010.
Like, that to me was a goalie stealing the series. And I thought the Canadians, hey, they won it, full marks. But I thought they were kind of lucky to win. And I thought
Did you think Patrick Kane's Stanley Cup winning goal that year was lucky?
No, I think he knew exactly what he was doing.
There are only two people on the ice that did then, him and Nick Boynton.
Yes. I'll tell you this. The thing to me was, I didn't realize it happened when it happened. But after when I saw it, he knew what he was shooting at.
I think he always shoots there. I think those are the targets he always shoots at. And this one just kind of went in.
I think he knew what he was doing. But, like, honestly, like, how many series have you ever, in any sport where you look at, like, football's different. Those are one-on-one. And one wild card baseball game is different. I get it. It's a one game. But in how many, like, series, 4 out of 7,
but you don't think
do you that, ever look at and say the lucky team won?
You don't think that in a game where you're dealing with a rubber puck, frozen ice, and a 1/8-inch blade of steel with 10 skaters and 2 goalies on the ice,
I think they
trying to dance around 4 officials
generally
to try to get into small areas to get a shot off.
Who was the luckier team last night, Toronto or Boston?
I think Boston was.
I disagree. I think Toronto was.
Based on?
Did you see those goals?
Okay, the Jake DeBrusque goal, the little worm burner along the ice.
The goalie made a bad play.
That's not a lucky goal.
Look at Toronto's first couple
99
of goals.
99 times out of 100, Frederik Andersen makes that save.
Yeah.
What was different last night?
But that wasn't because he was lucky. It's because he was unlucky. It's because he, unfortunately, screwed it up.
See, then we're arguing semantics. Unfortunate versus unlucky.
I think there's a difference between unlucky and you make a mistake. Unlucky is like that third goal where that hit like a defenseman right in front of Rask. That's unlucky.
This is the sound right now, people turning off the podcast or saying, talk about something else.
Okay,
looks like they're staggering it this year, by the way, getting back to draft lottery.
Yes.
They'll do 15-4 and then 3-1 in the second intermission, I think, of the Vegas-San Jose game to increase the drama of it.
I can only imagine those guys who have to sit upstairs in that room for 2 more hours.
Yeah.
Because if you're not familiar with the process, they split them up, right? You have one representative who sits in the room that you all see on television, and you have another representative that stays locked in the room upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been one owner who has damaged that room before.
Did you see it happening?
No, but we knew about it. Because I can't go in there, right?
Yeah.
They keep those guys all locked in.
Which lottery was that? Was that McDavid lottery?
I believe it was the Matthews lottery.
And were they mad because they didn't get Matthews or mad because Toronto did?
It was mad because they dropped. I'm not going to say it on the podcast. I'm trying to figure out a convoluted way of asking.
Because
I've never told my no about it, so I'm not going to say who it was.
Okay, elsewhere in the blog, Stars and Rangers, coaching situation, anything clearer, or is this a wait-and-see approach, no hurry? Going to see what happens at the end of the season.
I don't think so. Like, I had heard that Dallas didn't want anyone with previous ties. And I sent a note asking, and then I think once it got out, because I was doing something, I got a note saying that that's not necessarily the case. But some guys who were candidates had told me they'd heard that, that they tried Hitchcock going back. And I really thought that guys like Tippett and Desjardins and Gullitson could be candidates for that job. But somebody told me that they didn't think that was the case. So we'll see.
You mentioned Gullitson there. And in the blog this week, you talk about the idea of him perhaps ending up as an assistant on a bench somewhere around the NHL. I'm always curious to see what, you know, next move is for recently dismissed coaches. A lot of times for general managers, they'll pick up a quote-unquote scouting position.
Yep.
With another team. Coaching is a little bit different. Some guys now will go back to junior hockey, and you write about Tim Hunter. Some guys will stay in the NHL, but they'll stay on as an assistant just to stay in the National Hockey League. Give a feel of where Gullitson is at and what he wants to do.
I think Gullitson, I don't know if Gullitson will be a head coach next year. I just don't know. But I do think he'll have options to be on benches. I could see some situations where he might be an associate coach. I do think there's a possibility of Edmonton.
That would be great showbiz. You understand how great showbiz that would be.
Depending on what they want to do. But I've been told there will be some opportunities for him.
Tim Hunter, you write in the blog this week, you could see him ending up in the NHL sooner than later. Moose Jaw with a disappointing loss against Swift Current. Moose Jaw was the number two team in the CHL in the last rankings.
I didn't realize that those two teams were 1-2 in the Western League also.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know. I don't it follow was, it enough.
It
you
was,
do.
It was honestly, it was a seven-game. It was amazing. The games were close until the blowout at the end. Good on Swift Current, who right now are being stretched by Lethbridge, but still. Listen, man, Tim Hunter's done well with Hockey Canada. He's done well with the Moose Jaw Warriors. Braden Point, I suppose, would be the best player that he's finished for the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Howden, Noah Gregor, Jaden Helbigawax, who this year just tore up the Western Hockey League. All these guys have Tim Hunter fingerprints.
Yep.
Probably ready to get back in the NHL. And we've seen now more so than ever. I mean, you look at last year's, Memorial Cup four, and, they all ended up leaving their team. And, a lot of them found work in pro hockey. Rocky Thompson with Chicago. Like, junior hockey, once upon a time, when you went back, that was it. You tried, you're going back, and you're staying there.
And you're staying there.
Whether it's Benoit Grew, whether it's Dick Todd from so many years ago. But that's not true anymore. And guys can go to junior hockey and can go back to the NHL. And you think Tim Hunter's there and Tim Hunter's close?
I've just heard that pro is in his future.
Yeah.
Whether it's an NHL assistant or an AHL head, that's all I've been told.
We probably should have done this earlier in the podcast. Let me get to it now. Chuck Fletcher.
Yeah.
You talked about this a while ago. I remember you mentioned something on Twitter about this series having greater implications than just a loss, and that a loss in the opening round will mean changes. Chuck Fletcher, did that one catch you, or did you have an idea?
No, it did, because the word on Chuck all year was that if they didn't win a round, he was in trouble. Like, there are some reporters out there have a really good handle on teams, right? Like, Larry Brooks, I think, has a really good handle on the Rangers.
Yep.
Like, John Hovind is not a writer, but I think he's got a really good handle on the Kings.
LA, yeah.
So Mike Russo is one of those guys. In Minnesota, like, Mike's got a real good handle on them. So he wrote before the playoffs that Chuck was probably going to be safe. And that's when I thought, okay, he's going to survive, because they knew they were hurt. And then the night that they lost, the next day, I think it was, Russo wrote, all of a sudden, Chuck's back in trouble. And look, I don't guess people's sources. I don't like doing that. I just think that if the way Michael writes, he has a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment I saw that, I was like, he's in trouble and he's going to be out. Now, the one thing I really do believe is I think Leopold is a passionate guy, and I think he does have a lot to say. Fletcher pulled off the Parise suitor thing, but there's no question that was ownership driven.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, I think, have a voice with ownership there. I think Vanek was a guy that Leopold wanted, that Chuck fought against. So I think that you go there knowing that the owner wants things a certain way, and you better be prepared for that. I think everybody there as a candidate knows that.
Impressive thing about Chuck Fletcher is, and this is rare, sometimes you can hit on one Hail Mary pass. He hit on two, Devin Dubnyk and Eric Staal.
Yeah.
And even by Chuck's admission, I remember talking to him on Hockey Central at noon one afternoon. He said, listen, I'm no genius here. I was taking a chance because we needed a goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And here's, Devin Dubnyk and, it wouldn't happen so much now, but a lot of teams gave up on a big athletic goaltender. We talked about Devin Dubnyk, I think, in the very first podcast here, Elliot.
Yeah.
So that was a Hail Mary pass. The other one was Eric Staal. What happens with Eric Staal in Minnesota now?
You know, that's the big question because...
Great season.
No, like his value will never be higher, right? And he's 33-year-old with 42 goals this century.
Yeah.
Alfredson 1, Jágr 2, Solani 3, Iginla 4, Eric Staal 5. Okay, so his value will never be higher than it is now. I think he has a 10-team no-trade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are always looking for centers. See, first of all, they got some cap issues, number one. Number two, like I was really impressed by Matt Dumba.
Yeah.
Now they're going to have to pay him.
Yeah.
I don't think they were very happy with Coyle. I don't think they're very happy with Niederreiter. And after I wrote it today, someone reached out to me and say, I don't think they're very happy with Brodin either.
Mm-hmm.
Those are guys who are all signed. Those guys are the age that they have to drive your team. We learned in the playoffs, those guys aren't ready to drive that team. So what do you do if you're Paul Fenton? You know, the guy who might have the most trade value
Why do you
is
say Paul
Eric
Fenton?
Staal.
Why do you say Paul Fenton?
Because I think it's his job to lose.
You think Paul Fenton's got this one?
If he wants it.
No other candidates possible?
No, I think they're going to interview other guys. I think they're going through a process. I just think also I say Paul Fenton because he's going to have the first chance to say, this is what I would do. So I think
Leopold would know him from the Nashville.
He also knows Tom Fitzgerald, who's the first captain of the Predators, who I think will get an interview there too. But Fenton's the guy he knows the most.
Okay.
And I just think that if you go in there, that's the group of guys that you're going to have to deal with. How do we sort that out? You know what Koivu is. You know what Suter is. You know what Parise is. What are you going to do with Eric Staal? What are you going to do with the Brodins, the Niederreiters, the Coils, who you were disappointed with in the playoffs this year?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to sign Matt Dumba to? You know, they've got some kids coming. Like, people like Eriksson-Ek. They like Kanin. They like Greenway. It's that middle group, the guts. What are you going to do with them?
We shall see. Anything more on Carolina? And that's next when 31 Thoughts, the podcast, returns. The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade. What's new, if anything, with the Carolina Hurricanes? Interesting note, and a disappointing one as well. You hate to see this happen to the legends, specifically of a franchise, but Ron Francis asked to work from home. What happens here with the GM search?
Well, Steve Greeley was there Thursday, so we'll see what happens with him. I believe they offered a job to Lawrence Gilman, and he turned it down, but I don't think it was the GM job. So obviously they're still looking for people. They've hired Paul Kropelka. But I'll tell you this. I think the owner is going to be, if not the GM in name, he's going to be a dominating presence. And I think he has some ideas, Jeff. Like, I've heard he loves Aho. He said it. I've heard he loves them.
Everybody loves him.
The number one pick last year.
Martin Netzgatsch.
I've heard he loves him.
Yep.
Other than that, I don't know how many guys he's really in love with there. The one thing I have heard is that they feel that they need to get harder to play against.
You mentioned this on the podcast last week, and this week in 31 Thoughts, the blog, you talked about Jeff Skinner and what the future is there, who's not, you know, someone that's necessarily hard to play against. Although, man, I can recall specifically Jeff Skinner, when he played in the OHL for the Kitchener Rangers, he was tough to play against. Now, mind you, it's a different size of athlete that we're dealing with here, but clearly much more of a skill player, a shooter, fantastic skater at the NHL level. Do they see what's out there for Jeff Skinner for the Carolina Hurricanes and build this thing around? You mentioned Sebastian Aho, build their own.
I think they might. Also, don't forget, Skinner's 1 year away from UFA. Yep. So, you know, I mean, I wonder about L.A. Like, to me, that makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense because there's a team that wants to get faster yesterday.
Yes.
And Jeff Skinner addresses a need.
Yes, I could see that happening. You know, I do want to say something. I had somebody who called me today after that piece published, and they were unhappy with the note about Francis. And they said, like, why would you put that in there? And I said, look, it is news. Like, he's the greatest player in franchise history, arguably. And I'm not interested in getting involved in whatever disagreement there is here. But I think it's unfortunate. Like, you know, he's the greatest player in franchise history. He really cared. People are allowed to disagree. Tom Dundon doesn't like Ron Francis, and there were things he legitimately did not like about the way Francis ran the team. It's okay. But it is news that he's not there.
See, the surprising thing to me when it comes to the situation with Dundon and Francis, and I don't know either of them, nor do I understand what the issue is between them. But I find it interesting that Dundon, who seems so married to the history of the Carolina Hurricanes / Hartford Whalers, would feel this way and act this way publicly about someone like Ron Francis. Just strikes me as odd. Like, this is someone, like you mentioned, the greatest player in the franchise.
Yep.
His nickname is Ronnie Franchise, for crying out loud. It's not big Ronnie Franchise of Pittsburgh, okay, or of Toronto, where he played briefly. This is Ron Francis of the Carolina Hurricanes organization. And for someone that married to the history of it, of that organization, just rings a little bit bizarre.
It's tough to watch.
Bizarre for me.
It's tough to watch.
It is. Bob Murray, Anaheim Ducks.
Yep.
What happens here?
I think what happens here is they look at contract extensions for Gibson and Silverberg. Mm-hmm. They try to get faster, play faster too. Like, I thought it was really interesting about how he watched Sault Ste. Marie.
Greyhounds, yeah.
And he saw them swing back around underneath. He's like, we don't do that.
Yeah.
You know,
he obviously didn't watch them in the last game against the Kitchener Rangers where they didn't do any of that.
Was that last night?
Yeah, they got destroyed.
Oh, that's
by
where
Kitchener
he was.
Rangers.
He was going to that game when I spoke to him.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been very impressed with the Greyhounds at that point. But good on Jay McKee and his Kitchener Rangers. Yes. Nonetheless.
You know, the one thing I really liked about Bob, you know, Toronto, like, people like to kick Randy Carlyle.
Yep.
And Bob defended him. He said, look, like, he didn't disagree with anything I said. He talked about how we wanted to play with speed early in the year, and he said that Randy tried, but we were so banged up, we had to gut it out. And, you know, he brought up the fourth line's got to play more, and I said, you know, that was the knock on Carlyle in Toronto, too. He never played the fourth line.
Yeah.
He goes, no, hold on a second. That's on me. Like, he said, Doug Wilson, and I know Murray and Wilson are tight from when they played together in Chicago. He goes, he found Marcus Sorensen and he found Melker Carlson, and those were great finds because Peter DeBoer trusts him. I got to find him guys like that. And I liked how he said that Sam Steele and Troy Terry aren't going to be fourth liners at Anaheim next year.
Yeah, no point.
But I do think he really wants to ease the workload on Getzlaff, and he wouldn't talk to me about Perry. And I thought that was really interesting. I think that's his way of saying, you know, Corey Perry has to be better next year or we're going to have to do something.
They're frozen, though. That's the problem. What do you do?
Well, I think the question becomes, would Corey Perry, he got no move clause, would he ever want to move?
And if he says no, then that's the end of that discussion.
Well, I guess you could always buy him out.
Is Anaheim in the situation to take that much of a chomp?
No, not necessarily.
That's a tough one.
I'll tell you this. I like talking to Bob Murray, man.
He's
really funny. Like, he'll say to me, like, I'll be asking him a question, and he'll start a sentence, and he'll stop himself and go, I'm stopping here. I'm not going down this road. I'm like, come on. He goes, no, I better not do it. I really like Bob. I like dealing with him.
Interesting comments that he made about John Gibson. The injury situation as well, and sort of saying that some of the troubles that he had early on in his career are dealt with now.
Because I had heard that, and I had said that a couple of times, and I brought that up in our conversation. He goes, you're not right about that anymore. Like, that was something we used to worry about. Now we don't. And I think they want to extend him.
And listen, and I mentioned this a lot, he's probably a sneaky Vezina Trophy candidate as well. He's not, obviously, not a top three guy, but we'll see how many have him in the top five, because you could make a legitimate case for that. Before we hit the break, and Michael DiPietro coming up on the other side of it, you write about Dave Andrews, and he's one of my favorite people to talk about. And
he did not like this line of questioning.
I'm sure he did. When you walk through it as to what's happening here with Dave Andrews and the American Hockey League.
Well, Dave Andrews is up. Well, sorry, he's supposed to be one more year, but he's been like one more year for the last 5 years. Yeah. And he kind of laughed about that when I told him. And he said to me that he honestly thought he was going to walk away, and he likes the job. So their board meetings start May 7th, and he's going to let them know. But he said that he is considering staying past 2019 when he was initially thinking of giving them up. I think, I don't know this, but my guess from other people is that he wants to know what his succession plan is, and he wants to help train his successor, and he's willing to do that. I got to tell you, after I wrote that today, there are guys who are lined up for that job, who really want that job big time.
I've always said about Dave Andrews, he is the best general manager the NHL never had.
I've always wondered
why Dave Andrews was never a GM at any point. Now, I guess the closest he came is when he was the, I don't know if it was an official GM title at that point, but this would have been with the Cape Breton Oilers 83, maybe 84, when they won the Calder Cup, led them there. Before that, he was with the Victoria Cougars, who won the Western Hockey League Championship. Barry Peterson, Rich Chernomaz, Grant Fuhrer was on that team, went to the Memorial Cup that year. Cornwall ended up winning there. That's when they won back-to-back. But I've always felt about Dave, and I've always wondered, I don't think I've ever asked Dave about this, whether anyone ever made overtures.
And what did you say?
No, I've never asked him that. I'm just spitballing this one right now with you. I've always wondered if any team ever reached out and said, run our team.
What about, never mind GM, but team president or something.
Sure,
like that.
Absolutely.
You know what the other one was with him that was good I didn't have room for? Was that somebody told me that he's tougher than Gary Bettman running a meeting. I was
really,
like,
no
way. And someone goes, oh, yeah, like if you've ever seen Dave get mad at people, he's tougher than Bettman. And I said that to him, and he goes, I doubt that. But I didn't have any room to put that in.
I used to always look forward every year at the beginning of the season. Dave Andrews would be in Toronto. We'd usually meet at a Marlies game and have a conversation after he ran the Scotiabank half marathon.
Yes, I know he runs marathons.
Big runner.
How old is David?
Oh, off to the internet machine.
Oh, I think he turned 70. No, I think he turned 70 this year. And I wouldn't say half his age because I'm 47. But it's disgusting. He's like 23 years older than I am, and he looks that much better than
me. He's in amazing shape. Yeah. He's a wonderful guy, too, if you ever had a chance to talk to him. And he's done a great job with the American League. Like, think of the hurdles that league has had year in and year out, and the headaches that they've had year in.
It's
shuffling
not, like,
in and
all
out
the news
teams.
Most of the news is good now.
I know. He's done a remarkable job. Take a break. When we come back, Michael DiPietro of the Windsor Spitfires / Vancouver Canucks / Team Canada. Looking to stream the entire Stanley Cup playoffs? Sportsnet Now might be the product for you. Available to anyone over the internet, Sportsnet Now gives you 24/7 access to Sportsnet's channels, including content not available on television. You can stream on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones and tablets, Apple TV, Xbox, and Chromecast. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. In addition to every game of the Stanley Cup playoffs, you'll also get the Toronto Blue Jays with a subscription, plus the MLB postseason and World Series, Raptors and NBA playoff matchups, Premier League, and, oh yeah, MasterCard Memorial Cup, and much, much more. Visit snetnow.ca for more details.
Thank you for calling the 2017 MasterCard Memorial Cup champion Windsor Spitfires. If you know your party's extension, you may enter it now.
Hey, Mikey, it's Merrick. Can you hear me?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, what's up? I'm here with Elliot. How you doing, pal?
Good.
All right, thanks for doing this. We'll come down here in a couple seconds.
No problem.
Or stay on the line for further instructions.
Elliot, want to welcome Michael DiPietro to the program of the Windsor Spitfires, prospect for the Vancouver Canucks, and on his way to the World Championships from Team Canada. And the one thing that we do know about goaltenders, Elliot, is they are very sensitive. You know, there'll be many times in the dressing room that the coach will blast everybody except the goaltender because they have such fragile egos. They're very gentle people. The nerves are very close to their skin, so they don't handle criticism very well. So I want to begin the interview
with three statements that we'll get Michael to react to. First of all, Michael, thanks so much for joining us today. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Honored to be on the show, and I'm interested to hear these questions.
Okay. This doesn't count as one of the statements, welcome,
It's going to be three statements that I know goaltenders, they're weird birds. You know, they're different creatures, so you have to be very sensitive about how we talk to them. So three statements that I want you to react to, Michael. Statement number one, you don't have the right size to play net.
I addressed that at the combine. I think, you know, you want to win. And I think you shouldn't really judge a goaltender on their size. I think if you can stop the puck, you deserve a chance. And, you know, I've been doing a pretty good job so far of it, using my size. And look at Jonathan Quick in the NHL. So I think size, unfortunately, is prominent in the NHL right now, but I don't think it's a necessity.
The only reason you won the Memorial Cup is because you played behind a traveling all-star team with the Windsor Spitfires.
Oh, my God. Why don't you just hit him with a stick? What kind of a question is that?
You know, all I have to say to that is obviously we had a great team in front of me. Fortunately, we lost in the first round, so we have to work to earn everything we were kind of given in the tournament, and we set ourselves up nicely. But, you know, I think the last game we were outshot. I wasn't maybe in the St. John game we were outshot too. So I know we had a lot of scoring firepower, but I think it took a full team effort. And I'm never one to really toot my own horn at all, so it's definitely a team effort for the win. But, you know, I liked my game in the tournament, and I think it contributed to the team's success.
OHL's had a hard time making elite-level goaltenders. Why are you different?
I guess why start now? I think John Gibson is a pretty good example of what the OHL produces. And I think he's a pretty good goaltender in the NHL, and I think he's doing a really good job, obviously. He's doing something right. So I guess I don't think you should put that stigma on a goaltender from the Ontario Hockey League. I think there's a lot of skill to be passed around. And in the CHL, I think we produce a lot of great talent, especially in the goaltending position.
Did that feel like a combine interview to you, Michael?
Close to it. You know, brought back some old memories, but, you know, it was good. I don't mind those questions.
You know, I got to tell you, when you hang up the phone and you get asked by your teammates, you know, what this interview was like, just tell them that Jeff was the guy who was being an idiot, okay?
I will.
You know, you're
don't worry, y'all like your plaid suits on Sportsnet, so it's all good, Elliot. I'm your friend.
You know, the combine story is a wonderful one, and I remember talking to you afterwards, and you wouldn't say who the team was, and I'm guessing you probably won't, you know, say who the team was anymore. Or again, but, you know, that address, you know, the size issue and challenging you on, you know, you can't do it. Here's another roadblock. How much do you think at your combine, the interviews, how much do you think was A, the team's being sincere about the questions versus B, testing just to see what answer you'll give?
I think for the A, I guess they have to ask the question. I really was expecting kind of the questions they were asking. I think the first one, majority of the interviews were, you know, asking me about my size and do I think I can play. But I guess the thing that really upset me was the one interview that basically told me that I had no shot. And I guess, you know, that kind of motivated me for coming into this season and try to prove people wrong. I guess I've always been trying to prove people wrong. And I guess I approach things with a chip on my shoulder because of it.
What are the chances you tell us which team said that to you?
Zero 0% chance. I definitely don't want to burn any bridges, and the hockey world's so small. So I'm very honored of the teams I met with in the combine. You know, to even be a part of the combine, it's just a great story to tell. And it's just, you know, it's just a journey and a story that a hockey player can tell for years to come. So no bad animosity towards them at all. I understand what they're looking for in a goaltender, and I didn't fit that criteria. That's okay, and we're going to win a Stanley Cup when I get to the NHL one day, whatever team I'm with.
That's good. Now, I always like to ask guys, when they're drafted, did they have a clue that team was interested? So Vancouver, did you expect that they would be a team that would take you?
I guess leading up to the combine, they expressed some interest, and I knew there was an opportunity, like a chance to go there. I just didn't know when. Also, the draft is just a crazy thing, right? So just when you think you can go right here and fit into this team, you know, you don't hear your name called. And it's definitely a roller coaster of emotions. I knew it was for myself and my family. But, you know, when Vancouver calls your name and they look up at you in the stands trying to spot you out, you know, there's no better feeling.
Was there someone else you thought was going to be the team?
There was a few. I think I'm definitely not going to use the names, but I think there were a few spots I think I could have went, you know, to a specific team maybe earlier. But like I said, I understand that not all teams are looking for goalies at certain spots in the draft at certain rounds. And, you know, like I said, I'm very honored to be a part of the Vancouver organization. They'll give me a chance to play, and so you don't get buried. And obviously they have great goalie coaches and great staff that you can really bounce information off of, and that supports you along the way for the process.
How much fun was it calling Gabe Vilardi when he got picked? We got you to do the commentary from it from the stands. I'm not going to try to wrap up your career before it's actually begun at the pro level, but there's probably a job as an analyst waiting for you in this industry based on a number of different things. But tell us about that experience at the draft, talking about your teammate Gabe Vilardi.
Yeah, it was definitely a cool experience. You know, my family and I were going the first round regardless, and Gabe and I were really close. And we knew he was going relatively early. Actually, I'm surprised he slid that far. But, you know, when I got an opportunity to chirp Gabe on national television about how bad he was at Chell, I think it made the whole night worth it, sitting down for whatever 2.5-3 hours it was. Just so the world knows, yeah, Gabe's a pretty good hockey player on the ice, but behind the PS4, he's not too good.
I was going to say, explain to listeners what Chell is and what that is slang for.
Yeah, it's you know, NHL 17 or 18, whatever year you're playing on PS4 or Xbox, and we would have tournaments. The guys on the team, we'd go over to his billet house there and start playing, and things would get heated. Controllers were broken, thrown across the room. So Gabe definitely doesn't like to lose, but there's nothing better than get under Lardo's skin.
Just if you decide to become an analyst, I've got about 8 years left, so I would really prefer if you waited till I was done.
Hopefully my hockey career lasts more than 8 years, Elliot,
That's
before
good.
I get analyst job.
Now, you know, Michael, you had a tough thing at the World Juniors this year. Everybody I spoke to said you handled it unbelievably well. And, you know, I know that's not easy. And just what was the best advice you got after that was all done?
I think the best advice I got was from my dad. You know, when you first get the news that you're getting cut, it kind of caught me off guard. I thought, you know, I obviously had a good last day at camp, and I thought Colton and I were pretty even throughout the camp, and it was kind of a toss-up. But I definitely knew I could have played better, but I think the nerves got the best of me during that camp. It was kind of awestruck, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I got cut and I went home, to be honest, I was really frustrated because, you know, you work so hard, you put all yourself into it, and you have no guarantee, you know, you're going to make the team or anything. So my dad basically said, you know, you and I are going to watch the tournament, and, you know, you're going to learn from it. And it's out of your hands. Just look at the positives that I get to spend Christmas with my family for, you know, this year. And, you know, my brother was down from Kansas City, so there's a positive there. Mm-hmm. But hopefully coming into next year, I have another opportunity to play for Canada at the World Juniors this year. And I think with that experience and a little adversity, I think it made me a better hockey player and, most importantly, a better person.
You know, when you go through something, and I remember being your age, when you go through something that feels like a disappointment, it feels like the end of the world, and then you reach a point where you say to yourself, it's not. And then something like this comes along where it makes you say, you know what, that wasn't so bad. How do you get from point A to point B?
I think with the process, I think it's funny how, you know, how the hockey world kind of comes full circle. And, you know, one door closes and you go back to the grind of junior hockey. And then another door opens. And I think you really can't really think about the possible opportunities that come along with not making a team and kind of opening up the other avenues. Because like you said, it feels like your world's crashing down and there's no light at the end of the tunnel, but there is. So I think for myself, working with my goalie coaches, trying to have a good, strong second half of the year with a really young Windsor group here really helped me, you know, mentally be a better mentally tough goaltender on the ice. And then obviously it helped with my abilities working with my goalie coach, give me that time off during Christmas time and hopefully get ready for what it is, a good tournament in the world.
You know, I think it's a valuable lesson too, Jeff and Mike. Like, I always tell people, and we have the advantage, Jeff and I have the advantage of age over you, so we've seen this. And that is that the right people are always watching. And particularly when things don't go right for you, they're always watching to see how you handle it. And I would guess that all that great advice you got from your dad, the work you did with your goalie coaches, the way you played, that put you on the path to here. And I wonder if that's the advice you're going to give to other people now, from now on. The right people are always watching, and how you handle yourself is always being graded.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great point. You know, a lot of things, people talk about body language and the way you portray yourself when you face adversity. And I think that that's really where you find a person's true character, is when things aren't really going their way and things are tough. I think that's really how you find who the person really is.
You know, we all have bad days, Michael, although I don't, in all the time that I've known you, spoken to you, watched you play, I mean, certainly you get frustrated, big losses, and, you know, you mentioned, you know, getting cut at the World Juniors this year. That's a big one. But I can remember specifically last year, first day Memorial Cup, we watched Seattle, I think it was Seattle, we watched practice first, and then you guys, and you let a goal in, Colby Armstrong chirped you from the stands. And then afterwards, every save you made, you looked over at him.
That's great.
With this big smile on your face. And, you know, you have this wonderful personality, a big personality, and you always seem to be smiling. What are your bad days like? Like, how many bad days do you actually have?
I wouldn't say a bad day. You know, there's definitely tough times during throughout the day. And, you know, early morning practices, you get hit in the head. I'm really not a happy camper. Ask any of my teammates that. They usually keep the pucks low. So especially early morning practices or warm-up drills, because, you know, when I do get angry on the ice, maybe a few hacks and whacks in the back of their legs, just let them know I'm there, and I really don't appreciate it. So to be totally honest, I think I really don't have too many bad days, which I'm grateful for, but, you know, definitely get mad sometimes.
Have you ever Billy Smith the guy?
Ah, is that a dated reference for you?
Yeah, that might be.
That is a dated reference.
Billy Smith, Kelly Rudy will tell the stories about Billy Smith, who's a Hall of Fame goaltender. If somebody shot his head at practice, you knew the stick was coming.
I think it refers to back in minor hockey. I tried, actually, I smacked my stick on the post and it broke. And actually, it broke a bit, didn't snap in half, and my dad pulled me to the side. I think I was in Pee Wee Major. And he took my stick and snapped it over his knee. He said, "You try to break your stick one more time, you'll be playing without a stick." So I think me holding on to my stick during practice has definitely been ingrained in my mind ever since. So I wouldn't say I throw my stick at any teammates, but I have shot a puck at a couple.
That's pretty good. Now, tell me a bit more about your dad. Like, I like this guy. So,
Vic's great.
So
great guy.
First of all, we've already found out that he gave you great advice when you needed it. And B, he can break something over his knee like Bo Jackson can. So tell me a little bit about your dad.
My dad grew up in Windsor. My grandparents immigrated from Italy, mm-hmm. and he's the youngest of three brothers. He's a blue-collar guy. He works at the hydro company in Windsor. He was an ex-football player. He got an invite to go to the Ottawa Rough Riders camp when he was my age to try out for their team in the CFL, but unfortunately his last game, his knees got blown out from under him. So ever since, he's been my best friend since I was born. And, you know, my mom passed away when I was younger.
Yep.
So before he met my stepmom and my stepbrother, it was just him and I. And him and I have been super close. He's my best friend, like I said. And, you know, to my eyes, he's the greatest dad. So, yeah, definitely thankful for everything he's done for me and made me who I am today.
You know, that's an awesome story. That's a really fantastic story. And you mentioned your new family, and I know Jeff has a story he wants to ask you about. But the one story I wanted to ask you about is, I understand that no matter where she's sitting in the crowd, you can always hear your stepmother.
Yes, I can hear her for sure. I know at home she's always to my right. Her and my dad sit together in the right corner in the WFCU Center here. But it's funny that my parents, actually my dad, will tape the game for my mom, because at times she'll be covering her eyes for extended probably 5, 6, 7 minutes of the game, but she'll still be screaming based on how loud the crowd's getting. So
that's awesome.
It's funny. Then she'll go home at night and rewatch the game once she knows the outcome and how many goals I let in, or if we won or if we lost. So she's emotionally prepared heading into the game.
And, you know, and one of the, and a wonderful woman, Sue, and, you know, your stepbrothers, Mark, and tell us the story, Michael, of the save that Mark made that made you a goalie.
Oh, we're throwing it way back, Jeff.
Yeah, man.
My parents just started dating at the time, and my brother actually also lost his dad. And his uncle, my mom's brother, and her husband died in a car accident when she was pregnant with my brother. So my brother never got to meet his father. So it was just them two also. Like I said, my parents were just started to date, and he was playing House League, I believe. I think he was on Team Orange. I have a pretty good memory. And all of a sudden, there's a turnover at the blue line. It was a tied game, and the guy made a move to his backhand, and my brother just got it with his toe. And the crowd went crazy. It was just a House League game that didn't mean anything. He always gets mad at me when I say that, too, because to him it felt like everything. But it really didn't mean much. I think his team was already out. But right then I turned to my dad and my mom, and I said, I want to be a goalie. And right there my dad's face turned white. He grabbed his wallet so fast. I've never seen him move that fast in my life. But, you know, I'm very grateful he gave me the opportunity to become a goalie. And like I said, I wouldn't be a goalie without my stepbrother making that save in that worthless game that wasn't even the final. So we laugh about it to this day.
Go ahead, Elliot.
What's your best save then? Like when you look at...
I have one.
So
in
your
mind.
Brother has his best save. What's yours?
I can't put one save that says my best save, but I think for us, the first shot of the Memorial Cup, when the puck went wide, I believe Gauthier got off the backboards and shot it, and I was on my back, and it went right in my glove. And right then and there, you know, if they would have scored, it kind of took the wind out of our sails, but I was lucky enough to reach back with my glove, and he kind of shot it right in there. So I think that would have been the turning point in the game. But for me, I really can't, finger point one save that really sticks out, but I think that one really would have turned the tides in the tournament for us if that puck went in.
That's the one for me as well, and I'm going to get all hockey geeky on you. And actually, it wasn't Julien Gauthier, draft pick of the Carolina Hurricanes. It was another Hurricane. It was Spencer Smallman, who is the captain of the squad. It's 5 minutes in. It's 0-0. Here come the St. John Sea Dogs, you know, win the Q. Arguably, you know, one of, if not the top team in the country, dynamic going through Blainville, getting to the Memorial Cup. And it's 5 minutes in, and everyone is expecting Windsor to get caved in. Smallman makes that play, and it's the yawning cage. And I think if I remember right, Michael, someone was either holding your leg or you couldn't get over in time. And so you just stretched your glove over, and you made the save on Smallman. And that, to me, I mean, the whole play, WFCU Center goes electric when that happens, probably bigger than the Team Orange save with your brother Mark so many years ago.
There's Shabbat to start things for St. John. But out of a long shot, a redirect just wide of the net, and DiPietro scrambling. He's got the puck. Wow. And just like that, the St. John offense comes to life. This is what we saw a lot from the Sea Dogs in their championship final against the Blainville Wabrian Armada. Good shot on goal on a tip that just missed the net. That pulls DiPietro out of position, but he has to respond quickly and does so, reaching. Even though his right skate is impeded with, he reaches back and pulls it out before it gets across the goal line. Good athletic ability shown there by Michael DiPietro.
And I think it was at that moment we said, okay, we know DiPietro was dialed in. Let's see what the rest of the Spitfires had. And I think if that goal goes in, maybe St. John, you know, leads to a romp. But that one, it's early. It's 5 minutes in. That one, in a lot of ways, early in that tournament, you know, helped keep you guys in that thing.
Yeah, for sure. And especially being off that many days, I think, you know, if that puck goes in, it'll really crush us mentally. So I agree with all you're saying, how big that save was and keeping the momentum on our side.
So who called you for Team Canada?
It was funny. Warren called me 3 days ago. You know Warren, he's pretty short on the phone. So he goes, Mikey, you healthy? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you skating? I just got off the ice. He's like, okay, bye. And then 3 days later, Warren calls me, and as he's calling me, he repeated himself three times, and then finally he called me a dummy because I really didn't sink in. It was kind of a whirlwind. I thought he was joking around, and then as he's calling me, Scott Salmon called me from Russia. So he invited me, and it's kind of been a whirlwind ever since.
Did you think it was legit when the phone call came in?
From Warren, I never know what to expect. So I guess for him, I know it's legit. He wouldn't be doing because he even sounded excited on the phone. And then once Scott called me, obviously the butterflies started. The butterflies are still in my stomach, getting nervous. But hopefully I won't get too lit up by McDavid or Bo. So we'll see.
Now, do you know how many of these guys do you know?
Personally, I can't say I really know a lot. The only person I really know is Ekki. Yeah. I skated with him in the summer a few times growing up, and then obviously we played Barzell last year in the Memorial Cup along with Shabbat. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a lot of new faces, a lot of new, hopefully, friendships I can make over there. And I'm just going over there just to soak in as much information that I possibly can.
What happens if Ekblad pretends he doesn't know you?
I don't think Boogie will ever let him do that to me. Boogie told Ekki to take care of me, so I talked to him yesterday, and I don't think Ekki will pretend not to know me.
So for those of you that don't have your hockey decoder ring on right now, Ekki is Aaron Ekblad of the Florida Panthers. Boogie is Bob Bugner, the head coach of the Florida Panthers as well. That Windsor team that you had last year, and we're starting to see players into the NHL right now, Mikhail Sergachev, Logan Brown will be there in no time. Jeremy Bracco is, knocking on the door playing with the Marlies right now in the American League. When you look back on that team that won the Memorial Cup in Windsor, home barn, great scene. People are chanting your name at the end. That must have felt great. Of all the teams that you ever played on, I mean, that was probably the most talented. But was that the most emotionally bonded team that you've ever played on? Like, was that the closest? I mean, you guys went through a lot. You mentioned the opening round loss against London. Of course, you're hosting. You win the entire thing. Was that the closest team you've ever been part of?
I think if you were to ask me that question after we lost to London, I would probably say no. They're obviously a younger group that hung out together and an older group. So it kind of like separated the team, I think, then. But I think the 40-something days really brought us close together and really bonded us because we're going through the same tough period. I guess the workouts and the skating and everything really brought us closer together, and how hard and intense everything really was leading up to the tournament. Because we really didn't just sit around. We really did work a lot, and I think it brought us closer together as a team. So when the tournament came, I think we were all in, and we realized how much work we put in leading up to this tournament, so we had to make it pay off.
And you won the whole thing, and afterwards, how many of you guys all got matching Memorial Cup tattoos?
I think everyone ended up getting it in the end. I know
really?
Some guys
the whole team? Kinda,
I think so, except one or two. I know Gabe wanted to wait to get his. Gabe's always a little bit slow to get stuff done, but I know a few guys, including myself, kind of switched up the tattoo. I added a few things to it, but majority of the guys got the same tattoo and says the same thing, and that's something we can have forever because, like I said, we won it in such a unique way, but we definitely earned it.
Okay, how much did you watch the Canucks this year?
I watched them a lot more than I did in the past, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Especially when Demmer got called up, Thatcher Demko, to play his first game. I was rooting for him against Columbus, and I wanted him to do well. So, and obviously Brock had a great season, Brock Besser. You're paying attention to those players, and then obviously with the Sedins and everything they did for, the city and what a great legacy they leave. I think that's something that I paid attention to also throughout the season. So, little tidbits here and there, but definitely more individual players and like how they carry themselves day in and day out.
You said something very interesting there, Michael. You said you're rooting for Thatcher when he got called up. Being a goalie is a funny thing. And Jack Edwards was on last week and he talked about how Tim Thomas said, "I'm not competing against Tuukka Rask. I'm competing with Tuukka Rask." Because even though you both want the net, you're still teammates. There are some people who might be surprised to hear you say you were rooting for Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, for sure. I think people who know me really understand that I'm a very competitive guy. I want to be the guy all the time. But I'm never once going to root against someone just to better myself or give myself a better opportunity to succeed. Because inevitably, I believe that it's ever going to come back and bite you in a negative way. And also, it's Thatcher's first game in the National Hockey League. Yeah, that's something we dream about growing up as kids. And then with me rooming with him during main camp, I really got to know Thatcher and the person he is and the work he puts in. So, like I said, I'm never going to root against someone. Obviously, I want to be the guy and play those games. But, like I said, he's a friend. He's someone I can learn from because he's 4 years older than I am. And it's a process to become a National Hockey League goaltender. I understand that. So whenever I can pick his brain, he was really helpful at main camp when I was really nervous. And he's definitely a friend. I'm proud to call him a friend.
From a goaltender's point of view, obviously, what's the next level like? What do you think the next level of hockey is going to be like for you when you get there?
I think it's going to be a big change because, like, obviously the speed, the skating, and the shots are going to be advanced. But I think not a lot of people talk about how smart the players are once you move up. I think in junior, you're expecting a shot in a certain scenario. But, you know, when you make that jump and you skate with older players, and I think I'll get a taste of that at the World Championships, that they're always looking to make that extra play and something that you may not see yet because you've never seen it. And then you just make that read because, you know, goalies, I always say that we never see the same shot twice. No matter how similar the plays look, you know, the speed, you know, the way they read the rush is always different. So I think the experience and will definitely help me, but definitely their hockey IQ is a big difference.
Michael, you're such a delightful guy. We do wish you all the best. You're going to be a fantastic pro, but before that, you got the World Championships on the horizon and plenty more hockey. But I want to ask you one final question. When I tell people that Michael DiPietro is on the podcast this week, and they say to me, who's Michael DiPietro? What should I tell them?
That I'm from Amherstburg, Ontario. Just a small town and a kid just with a big hockey dream trying to chase it.
It's awesome. Nice. You're a wonderful guy. Listen, best of luck going overseas. You're going to go to a fantastic part of the world. Hope you can enjoy it. We know you'll enjoy the hockey. Hope you can enjoy the sights as well. Thanks for this, Michael.
Thank you so much.
Breakaways and breaking trades. Catch highlights, news, and expert analysis from the best in the business. Sportsnet.ca, the home of hockey.
So, Elliot Friedman, how did you enjoy your first conversation with Michael DiPietro?
Great kid. Liked him. How do you not like that guy?
I know. He is going to, and I'm not trying to, again, as I mentioned in the interview, not trying to wrap up his career before he's really begun at the pro level, but like you can just tell. And I know him a little bit. I know that you know he really enjoyed even doing that brief little thing at the draft last year with Gabriel Vilardi. You can just tell some guys that want to do it, that aren't shy about it, that are interested in media. I can see Michael DiPietro down the road, probably when you and I are out of it, Michael DiPietro being one of those guys that ends up talking about hockey.
I like the way he talked about Demko. Like, to me, that's an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Smart guy. You know, and I can't help but thinking as well, you know, we got to get Rocky Thompson on the podcast one of these days. Head coach of the Chicago Wolves, affiliated with the Vegas Golden Knights, because we talk so much about players, coaches, and getting kids to play for him. I mean, he's always had great things to say about Rocky. You know, it's funny, too, because everyone that I've ever talked to about Rocky and all the players that have had him as a head coach, they all sing from the same hymn book. About this guy. And Mikey DiPietro is no different. And I've always wondered about coaches, head coaches, and how they treat goaltenders. Some want somewhat of a hands-on approach. Others are like, you guys are voodoo. Let the goalie coach figure you out. And I'll just figure out who's going to be in net and who's not. Like I said, I cheer for people. Michael DiPietro is one of those guys I cheer for.
Yeah, I can see it.
Just want him to do well.
Very likable dude.
Likeable guy. Best of luck to Michael DiPietro and Team Canada at the World Championships. Good luck to all the teams before you get offended, gentle listeners. I love all of your teams, and I love all of your countries. Okay, finish her up with some Ask 31. Long podcast today. You're taking this one to the gym. You are in good shape, sir or ma'am. Our good friend FatDad69 is back again, this time with a question about Chris Kunitz. Chris Kunitz has ear guards on his helmet. I don't see anyone else who does. Doesn't Crosby? I think Crosby has the ear guards on the helmet as well. Why don't more players wear these, and which player from the past do you recall wearing more protection than their peers?
Oh.
Craig Ludwig's massive shin pads comes to mind for Fat Dad. Pretty sure Crosby has the ear guards.
He has
well.
Worn them. I don't know if he's got them now.
The only reason they don't, honestly, I remember I asked Colby Armstrong about this. I'm like, why don't more? Because we all wear them men's league, right? Everyone does. I said, why don't guys wear them? He said, it doesn't look cool. It's like not wearing helmets in warm-up. Why don't you wear a helmet? Doesn't look cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's just it.
Nothing would surprise me with that. It's guys. That's the way guys act.
Yes.
Doesn't look good? I'm not wearing it.
Screw it.
I think everybody should be wearing the skate guards. Not everybody does.
But the shot blockers?
Yes. Remember the Rangers used to have those gloves that were that flat pads on the front?
Yep.
That, I think everybody should be wearing those. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people just don't do it. Who were the guys who used to wear those, like, neck protectors?
What, neck guards?
Like skaters.
Oh, actually, you know what? Here's another guy we got to get on the podcast. And freak me, we'll ask him about it, maybe right out of the gate. You know who's got two tongues in his skates?
Who?
Ryan O'Reilly. Ever seen his skates?
Oh, wait a sec.
Two tongues.
Yes, that does sound familiar.
He's got the one tongue that flaps out over the shin pad and one tongue tucked inside for protection.
Well, I think Mike Johnson pointed that out to me once.
Freak skates. Freak skates.
I'm trying to think, like, guys who wore a lot of equipment.
Well, goalies would always find weight enough, yeah, whether it's fishnet in
but
between the pads
to
stop the five-hole
really
goals.
Boxy players. Like, in the NFL, you know who was notorious for that? Eric Dickerson.
Oh, yeah?
The running back from the Rams and the Colts in the 80s. They used to play the Raiders, and you'd see him, like, in all his equipment, and Marcus Allen looked like he was wearing, like, a wetsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember that. But off the top of my head...
Didn't Tim Kerr used to wear something for his lower back?
Yes.
I mean, Kerr would stand there and just get cross-checked.
I know Craig Simpson had to wear that. He had to wear the extra padding. I can't think of any players who really stand out to me in terms of... They wore a lot of equipment. It made them look so much bigger.
Gar Snow.
Yeah, Gar Snow. That would be a good one.
It's funny. I was at the Toronto Rock Rochester lacrosse game a couple weeks ago, and my buddy was there as well. And it's rough. Like, lacrosse is awesome,
yeah,
right? It's a great sport. And he texts me. He goes, man, where did hockey go wrong? Remember when it used to be like this? And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, everybody finishes their check, and every goalie looks like Gar Snow. Muhammad's ghost, from an entire league standpoint, how bad is it for the league if the Oilers win the draft lottery again? I don't think so. I think it helps get Connor McDavid into the playoffs on a consistent basis and gives them what they need.
If that happens, there will be lots of angry people. I mean, people will be screaming to change the lottery. There are times in this job you get calls or texts from people saying, you've got to write about this, or you've got to talk about this.
Yeah.
I guarantee to you, if Edmonton wins the lottery,
they'll be changing the lottery.
There's going to be people in every media member's ear saying, you have to scream about this.
You're only allowed to win the lottery once every 5 years.
Maybe something like that. I don't know, but there will be calls for it.
From Lucas Piller, why do we almost never hear /read goalers? Nice reference.
Goaler.
Referred to as goalkeepers, even though that's what they're actually called under NHL rules. I think I've heard goalers called tendies more than goalkeepers, and I'm pretty sure tendies have to do with chicken tenders. Okay, so there you go. Nice little reference. You know what? It's funny because I've looked for this for a long time, and I can't find the transition point. At my house, I have boxes upon boxes of old hockey news magazines. Every now and then, usually in the summer, I'll go through a few just to look back in history and goof myself on headlines and see how much the game hasn't changed and see how much we're talking about the same topics just with different players. But I can't isolate anywhere, like one specific season or event where we stopped calling them goalers and started calling them goalies. Because for the longest time, they were goalers. That's it. They were always called goalers.
You know this stuff so much better than I do. Now, what I do is I will use goalkeepers in my blog when I don't want to write the word goalie 36 times in a row.
Just looking for a different way
to come up with netminders, goalkeepers.
Cage creature.
I've never done cage creatures, but now that it might get in there that you mentioned it. But I got to tell you, Jeff, like this minutiae stuff, like you are so much better at this.
I'm just curious. I'm just curious about when we stopped. It's more an etymological curiosity than it is a hockey curiosity. When did we change the word from goalers to goalies?
Anyway. I took etymology 100 at Western, and I'm not even that interested.
I love it. AJ Martin, thoughts on Ryan Merkley. Where do you think he'll go in the draft? Kid has some serious offensive chops. I'd hate to pass on skill like that. You know Ryan Merkley? Plays
from
for
Guelph,
Wellstorm.
Right? Yes. I don't know him that well,
top
but
five skill.
I heard like there's five. a lot of mixed opinions.
Honestly, Elliot, this guy is so skilled. I saw him play minor midget with JRC Junior Canadians, and it was just sick what he was able to do. And he does it in junior hockey as well. We've all seen I think Don Cherry showed it once on Coach's Corner, the teddy bear toss goal against Kingston Frontenacs.
Merkley spinning away from a check there, continues on, and some good stick handling work. Look at Merkley, high slot, scores! Ryan Merkley! beauty goal. And the teddy bears reign here in Guelph.
Edgework is superior. Vision is superior. All of it. And every year there's one guy in the draft where everybody says, ooh, I just hope someone else makes a decision on him. Mm-hmm. Like, I like him. I'll take a guy like that on my team all day long. Mm-hmm. Other teams are, I don't know. I hear stories. I hear whispers. How is he in his own zone?
If you listen to anybody, you can hear whispers of whatever you want.
You know, but every year there's that one, like whether it's, you know, the Josh Hosang might be the most obvious example, right? We look at him in that Ekblad draft and you say top three skill, easy. Yeah, yeah. But is he going to play in the NHL or is he going to be his own worst enemy? Mm-hmm. This year at the CHL-NHL Top Prospects game, I do all the interviews for that for Sportsnet.
Yep.
And I said, one of the questions was, what's the one thing people have wrong about you? What's the one thing that you hear about yourself that everybody has wrong? And he said, I'll tell you exactly what it is. One thing that everybody has wrong is that my teammates hate me. They don't. And I walked away from it. I think I was talking to Sam Cosentino and we're walking out of there and I was saying, that's the top of it. He was dying to get that out. He was just dying to tell people that his teammates like him. Didn't know what to do with it, but it was the first thing that came out of his mouth. So talented. I like him. He seems like
a
real nice guy.
It bothers him.
It's gotta.
It's gotta
bother him.
You don't bring that up unless it bothers you.
Well, it almost seemed like he was just waiting to say it too. Like it came out, like that answer was rehearsed and he wanted to get this out in the interview. I mean, if you haven't seen Ryan Merkley, go look him up on YouTube. Like some of the highlights are spectacular. Marvelous skater, top five skill, going away. From, okay, where does the concept of having agents encouraging guys to puke at the NHL Combine come from? A lot of scouts questions this week. You know that story?
No, what is they encourage them to puke?
This would have been 2006 NHL draft. This is the story told to me.
Mm-hmm.
2006, it was a player who played in the NHL. By the name of Theo Peckham. Remember Theo Peckham,
yeah.
Big defenseman, Edmonton Oilers.
Don called him Ted Peckman.
Ted Peckman, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so Theo Peckham, playing with the Owen Sound attack of the OHL, is doing, I don't know whether it was VO2 Max, it was one of the events at the Combine that involves a bike, and worked himself so hard to the point where he puked. Now you go to the Combine, there's a separate area that's all curtained off, and there's no, you know, no signs on it, nothing. But all the kids know that if you're going to puke, go there.
Go there.
That's where you do it. Because what was happening was, you know, a lot of the scouts saw Theo Peckham do that. And where a lot of scouting services and a lot of teams had Peckham, I don't know, like fourth, fifth, maybe sixth round, he ended up going to the third round. Because the feeling on Theo Peckham after the combine was, this kid will work himself to the point of exhaustion. This is a guy that you want in your organization. So, as was told to me, there were a number of agents next year at the Combine that were telling all of their clients, no matter what you do, even if you don't have to, try to make yourself puke when you get off the bike.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to pro hockey, Elliot. Now they've got it all curtained off so you can't see where the guys are. So it's no longer demonstrative and it's not a big spectacle. But, yeah, as was told to me, it's the Theo Peckham. Puke for draft status.
That's a great story.
At the draft. Okay, Elliot, which teams, this comes from JCL Commodities. Luke, which teams have integrated analytics into their drafting and who's been successful at it? I've always found it a little bit tough considering you're drafting players from CHL, Division I, various European leagues. I don't understand the concept of analytics quote-unquote working when they're all not playing in the same league and against one another.
Yeah, you know who's done a lot of research into that? Florida.
Oh, big time.
Yeah,
yes.
Florida's done a lot of research into that. Josh and Cam have written some pieces about that. I think Josh Flynn had talked about he was doing some research into that
Columbus.
When he was on from Columbus. I think there's a lot of work being done to understand what it means to be in this league and what your points mean. One of the situations I've heard that's pretty interesting is that there's a team out there that believes that if you're in the Western Hockey League and your save percentage is below a certain number, they're not going to take you. And they said there's only been one guy so far who's proven them wrong. and that's Braden Holtby.
Hmm.
He says he's the only guy out of the Western Hockey League that has save percentage, and I don't know what number it is. I'm assuming it's around like 912, but where Holtby's number was below, because they also look like, who did we pass on because of this and what happened?
Right.
And the only outlier right now is Holtby. I think there's a lot of teams doing that kind of work out there.
This one for you specifically, although I'm interested in the answer, from Kyle Selk. Elliot, what are your working hours during the playoffs? Do you sleep?
Not enough. You know, here's the thing. Like, first of all, I'll tell you a story, Kyle. So we used to do pretty much every game in the first round. And last year they had the bubble team of Dave Amber and Doug McLean do two rounds and we did six. And this year it was 4-4. So we did four rounds, Kelly, Nick, Ron, and myself. And Dave Amber, Doug McLean, and Colby Armstrong did four. And I felt better.
Yeah.
Like initially they told us we're going to do that. And I was like, no, I want to work every game because I'm stubborn.
Don't want to give up the chair.
Don't want to give up the chair. Really selfish. And then I realized halfway through, this was a really smart idea. Yeah. And so I feel better. Now we start doing everything, so we'll see how it goes. It's busy. I mean, the one thing I really try and do, my son is six, so I know I'm not going to see him at night. I do try to get up in the morning to take him to school. That doesn't always happen.
Dude, I'm that guy. Even if I'm home at 2 o'clock, I'm taking the kids to school in the morning.
Like,
you pay for it, but I don't want to miss it.
Absolutely, because you know, then you're burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I'm doing the blog and I finish the blog this week, like that's a sleepless night, so I'm a bit wired today as you know, we have a doubleheader tonight.
Tonight should be fun.
Yeah, but you know, like it's not something I like to complain about a lot. It's a great job, and the playoffs are the best time. I think there are times in this business that you know that your life is going to be really weird, and you accept it. I think I've told this story before, but my sister had a friend. She wanted to go into sports broadcasting, and she said to me, I want a sports broadcasting job, but I want it to be Monday to Friday, 9 to 5.
I'm
like, don't even bother.
Don't start.
You accept that if you go into this business, it's going to be different.
Where a lot of players around the NHL, when it's obvious that you're making the postseason, will start to change their routines or get everything in order, what do you figure, like late January? Maybe even before that. Like when it becomes obvious you're going to the playoffs and your life is going to just be 100% hockey, you know, have a talk with the family, here's what it's going to be like, and you start, this is what the routines are going to be like, and I'm going to up my workouts, etc. I do this for Memorial Cup. Like, I need to get into a habit because every day it's another game and you need to get into a routine. And so I try to get into it fast. So I'll get into town a couple of days early. Like, last year I found a great yoga studio to go to every morning with some of the guys from the CHL. Took Colby and Todd a couple of times as well. That was a lot of fun. But you get, like, a routine going, right, because you need it for your sanity, for your mental health, and for your physical health as well. Do you do anything knowing that this grind is coming up, whether it's try to get more sleep beforehand, whether it's taking care of yourself physically, exercise, rest, nutrition, anything like that before the playoff grind hits you guys?
I go out less.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing. Like, you know, when we work on Saturdays, we'll go out, a few of us after.
Yeah.
Like, it used to be that I would go out almost every night in the playoffs, go out after for a beer before I went home.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore. I think in the first, we've been working now for 15 days, and I think I went out twice, and they were both early. And part of it, because, you know, I wanted to see some of the people on the crew I don't normally see. That's one thing. Like, I do try to go to bed earlier. You know, it's amazing. Like, in this league now, there's so many more players who you talk to, Jeff, who value sleep now.
Yep.
And I understand that. I'm not a great sleeper, but I've tried to get better. But I also do try to eat better, because, as you know, we get fed every night. And if you're not careful, you can put on a ton of pounds.
Do you have a cutoff point?
Like, in terms of what I weigh?
No, no, in terms of when you stop eating.
No, I should.
Like, at night, like, okay, past 8, like, I'll try, and, like, 8 o'clock is generally a cutoff.
Yeah, I do try and do that. Like, if we have a doubleheader, they buy pizza. And
wheels are death.
And there's been a couple times I've somehow managed to walk away from the pizza. Like, you feel like you're like it's a magnetic pole and the pizza's south and you're north and you're getting pulled together. But I have generally walk away from it. I just generally try to eat healthier.
Yep. It's good. Well, best of luck, because the second round begins a couple of hours away from this podcast being recorded. So you survived the first round. You're still smiling. You still have a good attitude. You still have your health, it seems.
That sounds like you're rating me as a draft pick. He's smiling. He's got a good attitude.
You know what? The one thing about Elliot Friedman, shows a lot of promise but lacks focus. But then again, there's
that
a lot
is
of-
true. I do have the attention span of a housefly.
We've mentioned it a couple times, so we'll wrap. Good luck with the second round. The podcast returns next week. Thanks so much for lending us your earballs. Hope you enjoyed it. It's a lengthy one, but we feel like we kind of owed you after last week. We kind of ripped you off a little bit.
Yes, we did.
But give you some more minutes this week. Have a great week. Enjoy the playoffs, round two, whether you're watching NHL, CHL, or what have you. Enjoy the hockey, and we'll talk next week.